All right, so the armor of God. We have looked at many different pieces so far. We've done an overview of the armor of God and seeing how we need to equip ourselves to stand firm against the work that Satan does, against the lies that he speaks into us. We have seen that we need to be people who are willing to the belt of truth. There it is. You've got to wear the belt of truth, and we've got to be willing to know truth because Satan will always be lying to us. We've got to put on the breastplate of righteousness, and we have to wear that knowing that it is Christ's righteousness that makes us righteous, that we have to be willing to put on our feet the shoes of the gospel of peace so that we're willing and able to stand firm when Satan attacks. And now we get to the next piece of armor, and that is the shield of faith. And I don't spend a lot of my life thinking about shields. Shields are probably one of the less interesting bits of armor. Like most superheroes don't have shields, not most of the interesting ones. Anyway, like you've got Iron Man who gets to have, you know, boots that fly and missiles in his arms. Thor gets to have a big hammer. Even Hawkeye, who is lame, he gets a bow and arrow. And then you have Captain America, and he's got a shield, but he knows at least, well, shields are lame, so he spends most of his time using it as a frisbee. And so, you know, shields, they're not that exciting. So what is it that's special about this shield? What is special about the shield of faith? Well, if you think of a shield, then, you know, some of you may be thinking of like round shields. And if you're thinking of a round shield, you're wrong and you should be ashamed of yourself. That's a terrible thought because it's not a round shield. It is a large shield, a shield more like a shield that a riot cop has if a riot cop doesn't have a round shield, though some of them do. It's one of these big square ones. And the ones that Paul is talking about is like a Roman shield, which is about two-thirds the height of a man, or about the height of a man who is two-thirds the height of a man. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's how big the shield was. And the Romans would carry them into battle so that when people shot arrows at them, they would be able to protect themselves. The people in the front would have their shields, and then they'd all line up together and lock their shields in, so they made a wall. And then the people in the subsequent rows behind them would put their shields above them, creating a kind of ceiling so that any arrows or missiles that were shot at them, they would be protected. And this was important because what people would like to do who didn't like the Romans, they would dip their arrows in pitch or tar, and they would set it alight, and then they would shoot it at them. And this would be terrifying to have fire falling at you from the sky. These shields were designed to be able to deal with this. They were built out of wood and out of iron and animal hide, and often they were soaked in water, so they would be able to deflect the arrows or to extinguish the arrows if they got stuck in the shield. So this is the shield that Paul is thinking about. And this is the kind of thing that he is describing. But when we think about the metaphor, what is it that Paul is talking about in the metaphor? When he says, take up the shield of faith with which you can extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one, what is the shield of faith? And what are the flaming arrows of the evil one? Well, if we can, start with the flaming arrows, and I'll take a drink. And now it's back. Good. Hold on. If we can start with the flaming arrows, lots of Bible scholars have spent a lot of time speaking about what is it that these flaming arrows are. Some would say, oh, the flaming arrows, they are definitely Satan's temptations to sin. Some of these flaming arrows, they would say, oh, they're doubts. They're definitely doubts, or they're definitely suffering. Others have said, no, it's persecution, or it is false teaching, or it's parking fines, or slow internet. So we're not exactly sure what Paul was talking about here, but we don't probably need to narrow it down. Like, because if Paul doesn't narrow it down, we don't need to narrow it down. It could be any kind of way that Satan chooses to attack God's people, any way that he chooses to try and take us out of action. And so we're going to think of them mainly in three of the big ones, though it could be all sorts of things. We're going to think of temptation and doubt and suffering. They're the ones that we're going to be dealing with tonight. And so temptation is when Satan presents a sin to you and says, here, this looks pretty good, why don't you do this? And he will use it in lots of different ways. Sometimes he will use it in a way so that he can say, do this and it'll be really fun. And so you're like, oh yeah, that sounds pretty good. I'll get into that. Or then when you feel tempted, they'll be like, oh, you're a terrible person for feeling tempted. Or if you give in, he'll be like, you're a terrible person for giving in. And he'll just keep trying this and he'll keep getting you until eventually you give in or he moves on to something else. And so as an example from my life, I am someone who, probably like many of us here, have at some point, I've had to deal with the issue of porn. I have been someone, like many people, who've enjoyed looking at naked people on the internet. Now I'm at this point in my life where I'm able to deal with this so that I'm not looking at porn on the internet, but I still really like the idea of looking at naked women. Even though I'm married and I really love my wife, I haven't dealt with lust yet. And so Satan is able to tempt me. And so I'll be sitting there on the couch, and I'll be flicking through Stan or Netflix, and then I'll be sitting there, and then there'll be like one film will come up, and then I'll hear this kind of whispering in my brain, hey, there's a lot of naked people in that one. I'll be like, oh yeah, maybe. No, don't do that. And then the next one, oh yeah, there's a lot of naked people in that one. No, skip it. And then I'm like, oh, this one's foreign. I'm like, oh, foreign. Subtitles. And like, and naked. Oh. And like, no. It's like, you could watch it. You'd be very cultural. And I'm like, oh yeah, no. And then there's this kind of feeling. And even if I choose to watch something, which is fine, I'll be watching it. And then they'll be like, why are you watching this, Tom? There's naked people in the other one. I'm like, oh. And I want to go somewhere else. I want to look somewhere else. And then at some point, maybe I will click the one with nudity in it. And then I'll get to the opening credits. I'm like, I don't want to do this. It doesn't honor the women. It doesn't honor my wife. It doesn't honor God. And then Satan's like, how could you even do that, Tom? Why would you press play on that? You call yourself a Christian. You call yourself a youth pastor. Why would you do that? And so Satan then attacks me with the temptation. And then he attacks me with the guilt. And he will attack me from both angles. So this is how Satan works with temptation. He will just attack wherever he can. No doubt some of you have felt it in different parts of your life. And then there's doubt. Doubt when Satan takes the opportunity to sow these seeds of doubt in our lives, that maybe that God doesn't actually love us, or what God said in the Bible is not true or not good, or that maybe God doesn't even exist. And he will take any opportunity he can so that we will doubt God's word and doubt God's character so that we can stop serving God, that we can stop being obedient to God. We might give up on him altogether. When I was in my 20s, I had one of my most significant periods of doubt. It was when I was reading this website about ex-Christians on the internet, and there was people always telling their stories about how, you know, they used to be a Christian and then they stopped following Jesus. And they're like, here are the reasons why I don't love Jesus anymore. Here are the reasons why Christianity is a total lie. And I was reading and I was like, oh, maybe that's a good point. Oh, that's a good point. Maybe God isn't real. I don't know. And if these people who believed as much as I believe, if they can give up, then what's to say that I'm not going to give up? I mean, I don't know. And it kind of started these questions in me, and then the questions just built and built and built, and I had all these questions, and I couldn't answer the questions. And it was kind of like Satan saw this opportunity, then he got in there and he just threw in as many questions as he could, so my doubt just grew and grew and grew. It's like the first question comes, is like pulling on the thread of a knitted jumper, and then Satan just keeps pulling at it until there's nothing left. And so I was in this significant period of doubt, and Satan was exploiting it, because Satan loves to use doubt. Well, then there is suffering. And suffering is, we know what suffering is, but Satan will use suffering to make us think that God doesn't love us, or that God doesn't have good things for us, that he's not caring for us. And God can use suffering for the good of his people, but Satan can use suffering to drive people away from God. And I haven't experienced these intense times of suffering where it makes me want to leave my faith or mistrust God. But I've seen it happen in lots of people. I knew a guy once who went through this huge amount of suffering. He got really sick And during that sickness, he also went into a deep depression, and he prayed out to God and asked God to heal him. And God didn't heal him in the timing that he wanted. And he said, when I talked to God, God wasn't there. I didn't hear him at all. And so I've decided there is no God. Satan used that suffering to drive him away from God. These are the things, these are the arrows, the flaming arrows of Satan that he will use to attack God's people. And so to prevent against this, to be able to stand against these attacks of Satan, we need what the Bible calls the shield of faith. So what is the shield of faith? What is it that we have to protect us? Well, one would think that the logical answer is to have a strong shield of faith, you need a really strong faith. The stronger your faith, the stronger the shield. Like those times where on a spiritual high and you just want to just serve God and do whatever, and sin doesn't seem that exciting to you, and you want to pray all the time, and you're like, how could I doubt anything? And even suffering I would rejoice in, because God is giving it to me for my good. He will use it for me. And you feel great. You're on that spiritual high. When I was earlier in the year, I was driving from Melbourne to Sydney, and I was in the car, and I was driving along, and I decided to listen to an audio book about prayer. It was called This Praying Life. And as I listened to it, it was really great. And I was learning all this stuff, and I was getting excited. I'm like, man, prayer is good, and God is good, and God loves me enough to hear from me when I speak to him, and God answers prayers. And then I was like, I just have to pause and pray. So I paused it and prayed as I drove, and then while I was praying, I was like, man, I just want to sing. So then I spent some time singing, and it was the most beautiful thing of anyone in the car at the time, and it was a wonderful worship service. And then I went back to the audiobook, and then at one point, as I was driving, I was just outside of Holbrook. Well, I was about 80 k's outside of Holbrook, and as I was driving along, my car suddenly went, and then it went, and my speed dropped off, and I couldn't have consistent power in the car. I'm like, oh no, I'm going to break down, like halfway between Sydney and Melbourne and 80 kilometers from anywhere. This is terrible. This is really bad. I'm like, hold on, I can pray for my car. So I was like, I'm going to pray for my car. And so I was like, as I was driving along, I was like, dear Jesus, heal my car. And then the car went, broop, and then I just broop, drove off, and it was fine. My car was fixed. I was like, this is amazing. I haven't had the problem since then. So I got to Sydney. I was on a spiritual high. It was great. I wanted to tell everyone what had happened. I wanted to tell everyone how great Jesus was, and I wanted to spend all my time, you know, just praying and having this new spiritual level of energy. And sometimes life is like that. Sometimes we're in those spaces, and sometimes we feel like our faith is invincible, that we have such a strong faith, and maybe that is what the shield of faith is about, except that our life is not going to always be like that. You're not always going to be on this great spiritual high, and it's great when you are. It's fantastic. And God uses that to build us up and encourage us and excite us and other people around us, but it's not the truth of what daily life is like. We spend most of our life not up here, but down here somewhere, or down here somewhere. And so it can't be about having just a really strong faith. It's an unrealistic expectation. When the disciples in Matthew 17, they're trying to drive out a demon, and they don't manage to do it. And Jesus says to them that they can't do it because they don't have enough faith. He says to them, truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. And what he's saying to them is, he's saying, it's not about how big your faith is. You don't have to have this giant faith. You can have the smallest faith, the tiniest ounce of faith, and that will be enough. He's saying to the disciples, you didn't even have any faith at all. You had no faith, because even if you had just a little bit of faith, then you would be able to cast out that demon, but you can't. But if you have even the tiniest amount of faith, you'll be fine. So it's not about the size of your faith. It's not about having the strongest faith, the biggest faith. That's not what the shield of faith is about. So then maybe the shield of faith is about not just, you know, having a big faith, but having a correct faith. Having a faith that knows a lot, that is well studied, that has a well-rounded knowledge of the Bible. When I was at my Bible college graduation, not mine in particular, I didn't turn up to mine in particular because I'm just not a very good person. But I turned up to one of them, and there was this guy who spoke there. His name was Don Carson. And Don Carson is a theology gun. He knows his Bible so well. He's super smart. He's got like PhDs, and he's a professor at the somewhere in Canada. I remembered the name until I forgot it. Anyway, Trinity Evangelical Divinity School. There you go. Now you can go study under him. Anyway, he's really smart. He knows English and he knows French, and he's been known to, as he preach, he's so good at both languages that he'll just slip from one to the other and then back again and not even notice that he'd done it. So everyone in the audience is like, what the heck? And he's like, he just keeps going. Like, he knows everything. And when he is preaching, you hear from him and it sounds like he's just making it all up on the spot. And not like one of those bad ones where they make it all up on the spot, but it's so good. It's like he's managing. He's got his brain so big that he can just create a sermon. He knows exactly, you know, the structure that he wants, and draw on his Bible knowledge from everywhere, and all these ancient manuscripts. He can get everything in there. He knows all the Hebrew words and the Greek words. He's so smart. And then I heard him interviewed once. I was at a conference where I was being interviewed, and he just gave all these really wise, insightful answers. And he sounded like a really loving person and a really kind person. I'm like, I want to be like that guy. Like, that guy is so smart and so kind and so wise, and he knows his Bible so well. I'm like, he must never get tempted to sin. He must be like, the sin is like, look, I know all the Greek and Hebrew words for that sin, and all of them are terrible. I'm definitely not going to do that. He must never doubt because he knows everything. And I'm like, if he suffers, he must be able to figure it all out because he's so smart. Like he knows, if I could be like him, my faith would be fine. Except Jesus is not that concerned with having the biggest brain, with knowing the most stuff, with having the best Bible knowledge. He's not concerned with that. Like, you guys will probably know the story of the criminals on the cross who are crucified either side of Jesus. There's one of them there, and he's insulting Jesus, and the other one speaks up and says to him, "Don't you fear God, since you are under the same sentence? We are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve, but this man has done nothing wrong." And then he turns to Jesus and he says, "Remember me when you come into your kingdom." Jesus answered him, "Truly I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise." What makes that man acceptable to Jesus is not how good his faith is. It's not the content of his faith. It's not the fact that he can, you know, name all the books of the Bible. Jesus doesn't give him a quiz and say, "Who are my 12 disciples? And tell me about what you think is going to happen at the end of the world. What is the biblical justification for amillennialism?" He wouldn't know. And if you don't know, that's fine. Because that's not what's important to Jesus there. This guy knows that he doesn't deserve to be saved, but still he cries out to Jesus and says, "Jesus, remember me." So what is it that makes your faith acceptable? What is the right thing to have if it's not about, you know, the strength of your faith, the bigness of your faith? If it's not about the content of your faith, then what is it about? Well, it's all about the object of your faith. It's not about the one who possesses the faith, but it's about the one the possessor of faith has faith in. See, when Jesus talks about the mustard seed, the reason why you can have just the smallest amount of faith, the reason why your faith can move mountains if it's just the size of a mustard seed, is because of who you have faith in, the object of your faith. If you're trusting in God, then that is where your faith needs to be. That's what gives you a shield of faith, is about the God that you trust in. And for the criminal on the cross, what is it that makes him okay? What is it that means that he can get into heaven, that he can be with Jesus in paradise? What is that? It's the object of his faith. It's Jesus. That Jesus is right there on the cross, and he says to him, "Jesus, remember me." It's the object. And so the shield of faith is about putting your faith in the right place. or putting your faith in the right person. The shield of faith is all about the object of your faith. Where are you placing your faith? Who are you placing your faith in? And it's that faith that saves us, and it's that faith that protects us from the flaming arrows of Satan. So what does it look like then to live out this faith, to have a shield of faith where it is the object of your faith that protects you? Well, we read about it in Daniel chapter 3. We read about it when the king Nebuchadnezzar, when he put up that giant statue, which was 27 meters tall and 2.7 meters wide, which is an engineering marvel as far as I can figure out. When that happened, he said to everyone, "You got to bow down." He said to all his satraps and prefects and governors and advisors and treasurers and judges and magistrates and all the other provincial officials, "You need to bow down when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, guitar, kitar, bass, drums, synth, and all other kinds of music." And so when they heard the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, guitar, kitar, bass, synth, a cappella group, when they heard all kinds of music, they bowed down and they worshipped except for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And when they heard it, they didn't bow down. And so the king, as we heard, he was so angry and he calls them in. He's like, "Why didn't you bow down? Why didn't you bow down before the image?" He says, "If you do not worship it, you'll be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand?" And they respond to him and they say, "King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up." They say that because they have a shield of faith, that they are able not to compromise. They don't say, "Oh, well, look, if we're going to die, well, then maybe we can bow down and we'll just pretend that we're worshiping the statue. We'll just pretend, but in our hearts, we'll really worship Jesus." And then they say, we are not going to bow down. And our God, he will save us. But even if he doesn't, we're still going to serve him. See, their object of their faith means that they trust in God completely with their entire lives. They're saying, "We're going to do what's right, even if it costs us our lives." And so then they do not bow down, and so King Nebuchadnezzar has them thrown into the fire. And when they're thrown into the fire, they should die, except when they're in the fire, there is a fourth person in there with them. God sends someone to be there with them, to rescue them, to protect them, to save them. Because of the object of their faith, they are protected. And they are brought out, and they are safe. And because of this, Nebuchadnezzar then honors their God, Yahweh, the God of Israel, their God, the object of their faith. And the whole point of this is not that if you trust in God, he will save you from every bad thing. Because that's not what they believe, but that whatever situation you're in, whether you are tempted, when you're tempted to give up on your faith, to leave it behind, to do what is wrong, you choose to stand. And you put your faith in God, and you trust him that good or bad, whatever the outcome, that he is looking after you. Because the shield of faith is about the object of your faith, nothing more, nothing less. So how then do we see this practically? How do we put this, to work in our lives? What should we be doing? Well, when we face these times where we are attacked by Satan, then we need to know really, really well, what is the object of our faith? Who is the object of our faith? What has Jesus done for us that means that we can trust in him? And what's central to the work of Jesus but the cross of Jesus? Where Jesus, who is God himself, came to earth, lived a perfect life, and was killed died on our behalf, taking the punishment that we deserve so that we can be right with God. That is the center of our faith. That is what saves us, and that is what we hold firm to. And so when we face difficult times, when we face the trials of Satan, we have to ask the question, as we hold our shield of faith, as we look to the object of our faith, as we see the center of our faith, the cross of Jesus, we say, what does the cross have to say? But when we are tempted to sin, we ask the question, what does the cross have to say? Well, the cross says that if you trust in Jesus, then you are more than your sin. That you are a different person now than what you used to be. That you don't have to give in to that sin. You're a child of God. And when Satan accuses you and says, oh, you are no good. You're always doing the worst things. How can you call yourself a Christian? Then what does the cross have to say? Well, the cross says that no matter what you have done, God says that you are righteous, that you are loved, that you are perfect because of what Jesus has done for you. When you are facing times of doubt, when you are unsure about what is true, what does the cross have to say? Well, the cross says that there are many things in this world that we don't have the answers to. But we do know the answer to one thing, that there is a God and that he loves us. That he loves us so much that he'll give his life for us. And if that thing is true, then every other question can remain unanswered. That's what the cross has to say. And when we are suffering, what does the cross have to say? Well, the cross says that if the worst thing that could happen in history, if the only innocent man, if him dying could be turned to the salvation of the world, then God can take whatever you are going through and he can turn it to your good. That's what the cross has to say. We ask this question and we know this answer because this is the center of our faith. Our faith is not about how big it is or how smart you are, but about the object of your faith, Jesus Christ, and him crucified. And so let's as we wrap it up, let's just apply this to the particular situations I talked at the beginning. So when you are tempted, and say you are tempted to look at porn, what do you do then with the shield of faith? How is it that the object of your faith will protect you? What do I need to do? Well, my plan normally is like, well, I just won't ever watch TV ever again in my life. Or I will make sure that I put some accountability software on my computer and I'll send an email whenever I look at something even remotely dodgy. Well, I can do that, and some of these external things are good, but the issue is not with what's happening out there, but what's happening in here. And so I need to turn to the person who has saved my heart and who changes my heart. I need to turn to the object of my faith, Jesus Christ. And when I turn to him, I put my trust in him and I say, you are the one who has the power to keep me from sin. So will you empower me now and empower me now and empower me now and empower me now and empower me now? For as long as I am tempted, I will look to you for strength. And it's going to keep happening. I'm going to keep being tempted, but eventually, at some point, it will stop. It will go away. And I know that when I don't give in, that at the end of that, that I am happier than the emptiness of giving in to sin. And it's great to know that I have been obedient and God has helped me to do it. But I also know that if I do the wrong thing, that Jesus forgives me too. And that one way or another, Satan is beaten. Well, what about when I am doubting? What do I do there? How do I hold firm? Well, the object of my faith is Jesus Christ. And if he is someone who died and rose again, if I can rely on the fact of Jesus' resurrection, and I believe that I can, then all these other questions that I might not be able to answer intellectually, or I might be able to answer intellectually, but they're not satisfying to me, then they can slip away. They can be there, and I can just say, well, look, maybe I'll answer them, or maybe I won't, but at least I know that I have a God who loves me. That is what the center of my faith is. I have the shield of faith that will protect me. or when I reach suffering, how do I apply the shield of faith there? Well, I know that there is a God who turns all the bad things for my good if I trust in him. As Romans 8:28 says, God works all things for the good of those who love him. Not that all things are good, that even bad things are good things. No, bad things are bad things, but God will use it for our good if we trust in him. And so I will trust and I will wait and I will know that one day I will see how he has used everything for my good. Because he is the object of my faith. He is the one I rely on. I might want to leave. I might want to do something else. I might want to give up. But if he is the one I can trust in for life and death, then he is the one I can trust in throughout my life. And I will know that one day I can watch and I can see how he turns all the bad things good. That he will turn my darkness into dawn. That I will see that the shield of my faith has stood firm. And that my God has protected me and I have been safe. The shield of faith is not about how strong your faith is. It's not about how smart you are or how much you can muster up. It's all about the object of your faith, the God who loves you in his Son, Jesus Christ. If you are not a Christian, then what this means for you is that you do not have a shield. That things are going to come against you in this life and you have nothing to stand against them with. I mean, you can put your faith in all sorts of things, but there is only one God who gave his life for you and only one God who beat death on your behalf. So put your trust in him. He is the object of your faith, the only one who can get you through, so trust him. And if you are a Christian, then what this means for you is that you can look elsewhere, that you can try and run away from these bad things that will happen, but the only place that is safe is when you are behind the shield of faith. The only place that is safe is as close to Jesus as you can get. When you say, I may not be strong enough to get through this, and I may not be smart enough to get through this, I may not have the passion to get through this, but I do know what I do have to get through this, and that is Jesus Christ, so I will trust in him. Turn to Jesus, and he will keep you safe. I'm going to pray for us. Father God, we thank you that you love us. We thank you that you have sent your Son Jesus for us. Thank you that we do not have to be people with the strongest faith. We do not have to be people with the smartest faith. That we do not have to be people who get it right all the time. Thank you that we have you, that you are the object of our faith, and that is what we put our trust in. I pray for anyone here tonight who may be feeling like their faith is as small as a mustard seed, that they will know that that is enough. Anyone here who feels like their character is deficient, that they don't have what it takes to be called a Christian, that they will know that it's not them that makes themselves right, but it is you who makes them right. I pray, God, that for all of us, that whatever we are facing in temptation or doubt or suffering or any other kind of attack that Satan may be throwing at us, that we will be willing to trust in you, that we will know that our faith in you is our shield, that you, the object of our faith, is the one who keeps us safe, and we will trust in you. Amen.